Blog Talk Radio.
Everybody's got the fever. This is something we all know. Fever isn't such a new thing. Fever started long ago.
Good evening and welcome to Lenny Godfrey's Straight No Chaser. This evening we are doing a surprise roundtable of talking about a lot of concerns. Earlier it was scheduled for wonderful performer Jermaine Goodson, but Jermaine has gotten busy. She's a tap master and she will come to us in April. When it's a little less busy, because you know we are in the Black History Month, and you know we can be in great demand there. And you know what, I want everybody to work when they can work, you know. So I have called on two of my almost oldest friends, next to oldest friends. Gail Madison Burris is my oldest friend. I met her when I was 4 years old, and she listens to the program. But these two I met in high school, and I called on my two friends to come and talk with me for an hour about a lot of different things, a lot of different conversations, and I'm hoping as the board is built, thank you everybody for calling in, is filling up, that you all will, raise your hand, hit that number one, and call in and ask them questions and talk to them as well as to me. But before we do anything else, because I'm constantly having you people tune in, and I want to make sure that they have all the information that the rest of you all have been listening to for almost 2 years, and I thank you for that longevity. We are on blogtalkradio.com/ S as in Sam, F as in Fred, T as in Tom, H as in Harry, and the number 2. And how do you get on if you want to call in or ask a question? You dial 516-453-6063. If you are, once you're on the board, if you have a question, you press the number 1. That's about all of the housekeeping that we're going to do on this one, because I really want to get to the conversation. But let me just tell you about these two women. You've heard their voices before and you've seen them before, because they were both on the high school reunion segment that we did July of last year. And Fudge was just on the segment that we did for the teachers. Both of these wonderful personalities, I will call them, went to George Washington High School as I did. And we are, as Fudge said earlier, we are a product of the 60s and 70s. And we really attended that school when I think it was at one of its zeniths. For a long time, it was a school where a particular segment of our population went. By the time we got there, it was divided, I think, into thirds. There was a Black American and Black Caribbean population. There was a Latino population. And then there was a white population, which favored the Jewish and European whites that came to our school. And we had the best mix of everything. And these two people will tell you that we had all kinds of friends. in that mix. Some of them we were still trying to find, because some of them were so wonderful, you know, you still want to experience the relationship with them. But to bring them both up to date, you know, both of them went on to go to higher education. There is Fudge, who went on to City and got her BS in education there, and then she got her MS in education at Antioch College. She was, as we discovered, a teacher and a daycare director, and then she went on to teach in elementary school for a long time, 83 to 2013, and is, you know, an adjunct professor at New Rochelle from 82 to 2015. So she's gotten Teacher of the Year awards and everything like that. So my favorite friend and longtime buddy. And then there's the other Debbie, because there are two Debbies now. I call them my Debs. And that's Makeva, but we used to call Makeva Death Bat. She used to run track faster than anybody I know. We were in Leaders Club together. She graduated from GW, and then she got her master's at Queens College. She has published a book, and I hope it's still available for you all to see it, because it's a lovely, lovely book work from her, and it's called From Barstools to Church Pews. She published it in 2005, and you all should pick it up. She is an ordained interfaith minister, and she lives in New York City. I'm not going to say in particular. She's retired and engaged, and we're going to talk about Deborah's lifestyle is one that I want to talk about more, because I want to understand some of the terminologies that are applied to it. And so we're going to talk about some of that, but I want to welcome them both. Both of you all, say hello to everyone who's listening.
Hello.
Yes. Say hello. You can say hello together at the same time. Hello, hello.
Hi. Yeah. Good evening,
well,
everybody.
Thank you. Thank you for both for coming in. And let's, you know, I the reason why I wanted to have this is that I called it a round table or a panel of concerns. And there are a number of things that I have concerns about. First of all, there are things that I don't know enough about. And one of the things that I touched on, Makeva, was you are a member of the LGBTQ community, and I want to understand a lot of the gender vocabulary that should be applied. And so I want you to think about that, because I have struggled in my efforts to try to get it right. And I think so concerned when people, I want people to get my history right, my Black American history right. I want to get the all the terminologies that apply there. But both of you, I want to think about what's going on in the world, like Ukraine and Syria and Turkey, and how that can be affected in the arts, how we can pull that into the arts and try to find out if there is some way for us to help people to have a voice. You know, there is a debate in some circles that some people don't want to be referred to as the voiceless. But if people don't hear you, that's what you are. You have no voice. And so what we want to do is try to be able to apply the freedom of voice all the way across the board. And then, you know, I really want to ask this question, because it's an arts question, and I hope that some people who are artists will call in, and some people who are avid audience members will call in. And this is, I had an experience a couple of years ago in Texas in the university. And I was directing a company of Greenwood, an American Dream Destroyers. And it was time to, I brought some professionals with me. Some professionals were asked to come and join, but it was time then to cast the student body in some of the younger roles. And I could not find a qualified young Black American actor to do one of the roles. But one of the actors that came in who was white was absolutely brilliant. And I thought, well, this is a reading, and he's got the right voicing. I think I'm going to try this. Unfortunately, the students just went bananas. They had felt that they had been treated badly and overlooked by white actors, given roles that they wanted, and they didn't want to share it. And I asked them this question: is it more important for you to have the Black actor there who is not up to par than to have the qualified good actor? And that's one of the things. What do you think about that? I mean, when you go to the theater, is it important to you that the performer be a certain color, or is it important for you, you know, in certain circumstances that are applicable? You know, I'm not going to be ridiculous. I mean, I don't think I would want a white actor to play Martin Luther King, even though I thought the HBO interpretation of Martin Luther King's story, Boycott, the actor was absolutely brilliant in portraying Martin Luther King. And I'll tell you his name in a little bit if someone doesn't call me in and text it to me. But what do you think? Would you rather have the person there because they look like it, or would you rather have a person there who could make you forget and transcend it and give you the message of the writer? What do you think? Fudge.
Okay, that's a very complex question because there are so many layers to it. I like when it's colorblind when it comes to acting, because I do think that the only way you can wrap the audience professional and talented enough. However, mm-hmm. I do understand how actors of color feel because they haven't had the opportunities that Caucasian actors have had to just play any role. I mean, even when you think about Othello was played on stage by white actors as well as black actors. But so black actors don't even have sometimes the opportunity to play a character that's black. So I understand that. But I also know that if I'm not connecting to the character because that particular actor does not know their skills, then that's going to be a bomb as well because I'm not going to feel or connect to that actor. But I do think, you know, like, and you can probably speak to this more than I can, Lenny, because, you know, when you start out taking acting classes, you basically start out with the classics. So everyone's playing the Arthur Miller characters or the Shakespeare characters. And they, you know, when Shakespeare wrote it, when Arthur Miller wrote it, I don't think he had people of color in mind, but I just saw Death of a Salesman on Broadway with some great black actors, and it was wonderful. And I'm trying to think of the actor's name that played the main character.
Wendell Pierce and Sharon D. Clarke.
He was absolutely wonderful. Sharon D. Clarke was in it. Yes, it was absolutely wonderful. So you definitely have, you know, colorblind acting parts that can be played by actors of any nationality, but I do understand why black actors would have a problem when it comes to, especially when it comes to historical figures, because when it comes to historical figures that we know, like a Dr. King or, you know, a Malcolm X, you definitely want to see someone who looks like them play them because it's more realistic that way.
But let me just cut you. Keep your thought, because thank you, Franz, who just texted me. It was Jeffrey Wright, who looks nothing like Martin Luther King. Jeffrey Wright.
Right. That was the boycott. That was the boycott. And then David Oyelowo played him.
Yes, but he was absolutely brilliant in his interpretation of it. And so I say to you, when I say to you, you know, absolutely, I would not expect a white actor to do it, but someone doesn't have to look exactly like that person.
Absolutely.
If they
have the
ability to
look exactly like
that, all of
that.
Yeah. Oh, he was brilliant.
No, he was brilliant.
For me, there will never be any other. You know, I mean, there won't. No, there won't. There won't be. I don't want to. I thought that, oh, my God. Okay. Lines, I'm going to ask you to help me again. The actor that played Martin Luther King with the television movie with Cecily Tyson played Coretta, and I always loved his work. He's passed away now. It was a lovely interpretation of the life of Martin Luther King, but Jeffrey Wright crystallized it for me, and you know that for me is. So it's Paul Winfield. That's who it was. Paul Winfield. Thank you. I got it before Franz could give it to me. He was a wonderful you know, he was a fabulous actor. But when I looked at Jeffrey, how he captured all the colors, how he has a melodious ear So he's great with accents. And you would think that he was born in, yes, I got it, Franz. Thank you. I got it before you. I can read it. Thank you, Franz. You would think he was born there. I don't know where he was born, but I know that he is one of my favorite actors, and I don't think he gets enough praise when it comes to his range of acting. He's just absolutely brilliant. But that's my two cents right there. What do I know?
No, well, I agree with you on that. I love Jeffrey Wright. I've seen him on stage several times in Top Dog, Underdog, and A Free Man of Color. He lives in Brooklyn now, so he's a Brooklyn boy to me. But yeah, he's absolutely terrific, absolutely terrific. But you know, I guess in the field of acting, that is a complex problem. You know,
it has to be taken one example at a time. You can't broad sweep it and say, well, it doesn't happen, because I understood these students. When they said, you know, last year we had a director come in and we auditioned very beautifully for these roles that could have been played by anyone, and we were overlooked totally because we were Black. And I thought that, you know, that was insensitive of that director, first of all, and not to give all students and all an opportunity. And it was a scar that will leave, you know, you never know how you are scarring young people. It was a scar that will be left on them forever. It's going to be very difficult for them to digest it, because I said to them, I said, I understand, you know, that. I said, now I will not, you have to understand, as a director, the big picture is absolutely important. So if I will not hire an actor that is not qualified for it, no matter what he looks like. That, I will say this on radio, on book. I went, and of course I got one of my qualified actors who was not initially contracted to come in and who is Black, who came in there. But I do understand very much their dilemma, because the scarring is there, because it has traditionally been one when we have not been able to be on an even keel. If we were strong enough, the decision was made by a lot of people that, well, that person is not going to be acceptable to our regular audience, so we're not going to do it. And I say again, as I've said many times, it takes a brave person to grow in the arts, to step where there's no staircase. It takes a brave person. Makeba, what do you think? You've been quiet. What do you think?
Well, I agree with what y'all guys are saying. I mean, for me to connect with the character has to, you know, be right there in my face. I try not to see color. I think we grew up trying not to see color. I did anyway. You know, if the actor and actress was great, they nailed it. They nailed it, and I give them their props. You know, I really, for me, it has to be a qualified person to play the role, unless you're going to a historical figure.
The quality has to be important even then. But I think, you know, I would not want a brunette to play Marilyn Monroe. I mean, come on. I mean, the whole essence of why Marilyn Monroe was Marilyn Monroe was what she did with her hair and what she did with her, the essence of her whole stuff. That, when you get to these, you know, roles where you have non-traditional casting can be applied, and that lasted for about five or 6 years, and then it went away. And I was a great product of it. I did everything that, you know, anybody could think, that roles that Black women were not offered, I was allowed to do. But after a while, those opportunities were not allotted to me because they, you know, people were saying, well, you have Black theater now. that everybody doesn't fit into the all the characterizations that people perceive in Black theater to be that. You know, I think that there's some wonderful characterizations there, and I think that there are wonderful actors who do it, but everybody isn't that. You know, what would you say about Leontine Price? You know, she had to sound like Aretha Franklin all the time? know, there, you know, because you are, because you look a certain way, doesn't mean that you have traditionally the qualities that people think apply to your race. Doesn't happen.
Right. What do you call that, typecasting or something?
Yes, you call it typecasting. You know, I so often think about the brilliance of those two women, the brilliance of Aretha Franklin, the brilliance. To a genre close to it, but they created their own style, and I think that that is so very, very important, and it wasn't indicative of them being a certain hue, not a certain color, but that was one of the, you know, and I hope that people who make those decisions really start thinking and listening to people like you who say that the most important thing is the quality of what is being presented in front of me. Let us be reasonable about it. Let's not be silly about it, but to open it up, you know, to people who, there's so many brilliant actors around who can do so many brilliant things. And I was so glad to be able to sit down and talk to Sharon at the we did a luncheon. I co-hosted a luncheon for her at Sardi's, and she's delightful. She is not a Black American, though. She is an English. She's got English. She's from London. So that there is another, you know, you can tell the ability to acquire our mannerisms and our accents and everything is there also. And if you do it well and if you have that investment in it, that's what, the way you need to go, you know. But anyway. That's a debate I'm sure that I will hear from many people about. Now, Lenny, I think feel like this way, and I think that it's important that, you know, we just have a person of color there no matter what. Everybody's due to their own opinions, and if you have one that is so strongly, I welcome you to come to the program, as long as you know how to behave yourself and come on the program and your opinion. Oh, yes, because, you know, I will read you if you don't know how to behave yourself. But,
whoa.
Yes. So that's one of the things that I really wanted to talk about and find out how you all felt, especially because you both are entangled in the arts in a lot of different ways, but you really are a theater enthusiast. I mean, even more than I am. You know, you tell me about plays that I haven't seen. And it is important for me to find out what is important to a person like you, not only as just a person, as a thespian, as a performer, as a director, what my demographic is what my demographic would want. So thank you, Pudgy. Mm-hmm. And thank you, Makiva. So, Makiva.
Well,
all right. So now I'll put you on a hot spot because you have never, ever been what's the word? You've never been shy about who you are and what you who you are in your world and how you identify. And I've always respected you for that. People who will see Makiva will see these are two really beautiful women that you will see. Makiva is a beautiful woman, and I would laugh when the guys would come up to me and go, you know her? And I went, yeah, but you don't want to mess with her now. it was a wonderful, interesting introduction to the world before it was called LGBTQ, to the gay world. So tell me how important all of these prefixes and pronouns and everything is to the identity.
It's tiring. It is. You need to walk around with a dictionary. I need to walk around with a dictionary. You know? I mean, it's important to get the pronouns right, you know, so everyone can feel like they've been seen and all that. But, you know, you have all these, you know, when we were growing up, it was gay, straight. Boom. That's it. You know, and now you have a whole nother vocabulary that I am still learning because it changes. Yeah. It's not static. It's not, this is what it is today and it'll be this tomorrow. No, they're always adding something, you know?
Yeah.
So it's kind of difficult to catch up. I mean, every year, the centers in New York, they make sure they put out a dictionary around Pride Month or before Pride Month, so everyone will know what a pansexual is. Everyone will know what, you know, all these other new names that people of my age, like, what the heck, you know? But it is difficult to keep up, but it's important. It's important that we learn, even the people that are in the community, we learn all the new terminology coming out because we want everyone to feel that they have a place.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's important to be heard. It's important to be seen. And if you go to someone that's trans and misspeak, you might get your feelings hurt. You know, so you usually walk in and I'm glad that a lot of establishments now say, what do you want to be known as? What are your pronouns?
Mm-hmm.
You know, and it's hard still to grab some of them, you know, like you try to reason it. But no, if that's what you are, that's who you are, then that's who you are. If you're a they, then okay, they. It takes a minute to put that in the conversation, but we have to practice. We have to continually practice. And when you get it wrong, the person that you're speaking to should correct you.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
patience is necessary. Just like we have to correct people about Black American history many times.
Patience
is necessary. I would hope that people know that everyone is the attempt to say it right is there for most of the people I know because the respect is there. But sometimes you don't get it right because, like you say, it does change so often.
Yes.
And, you know, what was said, you know, last month, now it's a different definition to the word. And you go, no, that doesn't apply to me. And you want to go, okay, tell me what it is that applies to you.
Right.
And I've never, you know, I'm more offended when people think that they know about Black American history, then I would rather someone say, I really don't know. Can you explain something to me? Then for them to say, well, you all did so-and-so-and-so-and-so, didn't you? And I go, no, that's incorrect. You know, ask. So I think the same thing can apply to that.
It doesn't hurt to ask. It doesn't make you stupid. It doesn't make you, you know, you're concerned. And I think that we appreciate the questions rather than the assumption.
Mm,
exactly. You know, we appreciate the question. You don't know, ask me. But don't assume because I look like this that I'm this.
Mm-hmm.
You know, because I know some people that look like really hardcore. And you call them out of a sheet. Oh man, you're gonna be in trouble. You're gonna be in trouble.
Yeah.
You know? So, Debbie, it sounds like to me what you're telling Lenny and I is that what needs to happen because things are changing as we speak in the in the community. So patience and open-mindedness is very important.
Definitely.
Mm-hmm. Definitely.
Mm-hmm.
Definitely.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
and people, I mean, I have friends that I've known for a while. They still try to get it right, you know, and it's okay. It's okay.
Yeah.
You know, I'm not going to beat you up because you call me a he or something that I don't identify with, you know, I just correct you, keep it moving. You know, the love is there. Love is genuine. You know, I don't want no person that's going to be, you know, that's not sincere about their wanting to gain this knowledge.
Mm-hmm.
You know, no. If you don't know, ask me because you know I've always been upfront with my.
No, you always have. I mean, it was. I think what I learned the most about being around a number of people who had declared themselves gay when we were in high school, is that there was always this fictitious thing is that, well, they're going to push themselves on you. And I never experienced that. I was very clear about what my choices were, and my choices were always respected. And I thought that was a real unkind description of behavior that was associated with being gay back in the day, and maybe some people do it now. I thought it was unkind, and I was constantly, because people would say to me, "Well, you know, how is it to be around everybody that you know with in leaders club? Say we leaders, and you know there were a couple that were there, and I said, "What do you mean? How does it be? What is it? You know, what do you feel safe?" I was like, "Oh, you know, that kind of silliness." And it sounds silly, but they were really questions like that, because people thought, you know, and it was very important for me to say, no, that doesn't exist in my relationships that I have. Right. That's not something that you have to worry about. I never worried about it. Never, you know.
Yeah.
I think we all respected each other enough so that we were there to do it.
I think so, too.
Yeah. What do you think, Fudge?
I definitely think everything you're saying is correct. And I really do think that in the 60s and early 70s, we were lucky to belong to a school that, like I think Debbie was saying, you know, we had a little bit of everyone in the school. If you wanted to speak to someone that had come from Eastern Europe, they were there. If you wanted to speak to someone that had just come from the island, they were there. We had our people from Harlem, like myself. We had our people from the village, which Debbie came from, the East Village. So all I can say is that I think we all just accepted who we were, and no one tried to, you know. Today I feel that parents and a lot of adults have these fears that if their children are exposed to people that are different, it's going to do something to them. And I never felt that. I never felt that growing up. I never felt like someone was going to try to push their sexuality on me. It was so accepted, because I think the one thing we had in common is we were all interested in the arts in some way, whether it was writing, poetry, whether it was, you know, drama, sports, dance, music. And so we had things in common that were so universal that I didn't care if you were gay or straight or black or white or whatever. If you wanted to go to get a ticket to the Metropolitan Opera, and we would go an hour before and try to get the tickets that were left over because they would be cheap, and we could see what we would do. And whoever decided to come and wait in front of the fountain in Lincoln Center, that's what we would do, and we would go and we would get our tickets, and we would find out about places that were free, and they could be in the village, and they could be in Harlem, or it could be anywhere. We were just, I don't know, you know, we just grew up, and New York was our playground, and we just decided that that's what we liked, and it didn't matter who was there. What race or nationality they were.
What mattered was that you were genuinely a part of the group that we all felt comfortable in. That was it. That you were genuinely being yourself. So let me bring this back around to the arts. Do you think that that kind of lifestyle, that kind of feeling is being demonstrated in the theaters today when they talk about the gay community? And when they talk about us getting along and the discovery of it, do you think that that is being hit on when you are in the theater and viewing some of the productions that have a strong gay scene?
Sometimes I think that the theater portrays the gay life to be more than what it is, more accepting, more, because now, you know, it's all on TV, you know, there's gay couples, and, you know, I mean, it's still hard times out here for us, you know? It's still hard times. Like, I work for the city of New York, And I was, you know, pretty big in HRA. And my supervisor put me in charge of a small group of men. And I got, you know, the first year, it was really hard. And I went to my supervisor and I told him, you know, that this is not a piece of cake up in here. I got a Latino, I got an island guy, I got, you know, people from Europe. And they all had their own opinion about this black lesbian over 50 being their supervisor. And my guy, my boss was gay also, but he was a man. He was a white guy. And so he's like, I never felt any of that you're saying. No, you won't feel that. You won't feel that because it's not your world. This is my
right.
world. This is how
right.
they perceive me. No.
Yeah.
And, you know, so sometimes in the theater and on TV, they portray that, you know, it's all good. It's not. It might be all good for a certain sect, but it's not good for everybody. So when people say, well, why do you still feel like that? Because I'm still experiencing the craziness.
Yes.
You know?
So we have a little ways to go in the theater before we have captured some of the realism that goes into
That's
being
right.
in that community.
Yes. Not everyone's going like, oh, it's so good for you. No, it's not. No, it's not. Not
right.
all the time. You know, you make your good. You stay within a certain group. You have fun.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you can
right.
relax. You can chill. Be you. But if you go outside that group, you might still get some stuff thrown at you.
Right.
And,
yes.
and then people don't realize that what you see on TV is not for everybody. It's not the real world. Not for this. Not for us black folks.
I think that I feel the same way about being a black American woman. You know, I mean, when I do see one, I don't see one very often that represents who I am. I think that there is an effort also to banish us. You know, I mean, we just kind of went,
yeah.
we almost disappeared from everything else, from the mediums that exist. The regular hardworking, upstanding black American woman. If you have an issue, if you have a drug issue, or you have, you know, an issue of being pregnant, or all those things, then you have a storyline. But the storyline is never, you know, there's not a storyline that comes with just being a hardworking, conscientious black woman, and
right.
it's not represented. So, you know, people think, oh, you know, they'll ask all these wonderful people, isn't it better? Well, it's better for them because they get a chance to do whatever roles they want. But it's not better for the people who are waiting for those roles where there's some genuine identification. I think
right.
that we still have some ways to go. And I think, here's the thing. I think that those plays and those television series are out there. I just don't think that they're being green-lighted because the people who make those decisions are a little bit more conservative and maybe more concerned about the demographic and the acceptance of bringing in too many issues in it. And I think we just have to be a little bit more vocal about what it is that we want to see in our lifestyle, you know.
Yeah.
You know, thank you, Debbie. I mean, that coming to that, and thanks for, you know, just coming to that conclusion. I see we have many people on the board. I don't see anybody pressing one yet, but now we have less than 20 minutes left. I told you all this was going to go fast. We have less than 20 minutes left, and I have like four more issues that I want to talk about. So if you want to talk about something that we talked about thus far, press that number, call in. Let us know so we can get you in before the last few minutes. If indeed you miss it, we are going to go to the webinar, and the webinar is also, the link to it is on the Facebook, and it allows you to come in. It allows you to speak. It allows you to become a panelist, and I bring you back to an attendee. So go and get that. The password is there. It's numerical and everything else if you miss your opportunity here. So I'm going to move on because I do have, I have a couple of other things. I'm disturbed about, we talked about in the 60s, the cycle of violence that happened in the 60s, along with us enjoying each other. The bigger picture was there was a cycle of assassinations that happened in the 50s, 60s, and 70s. And then it stopped. And do you think that this is where we are now with this consistent cycle of shootings that we're having? This beautiful young girl in Michigan State University that was a sophomore, yeah, that passed through. I mean, why? You know, I'm going to sound very cruel, and I'm going to say this, and I know people, okay, I see a hand up, but if you're going to kill yourself, well, why don't you kill yourself before you killed everybody else?
Yeah.
That young person deserved to have a life. All right. I see that there's a hand up, and I'm going to let them in. Hello, Lenny Godfrey, straight.
Hello, Ms. Lee. Ms. Lee Godfrey, how are you?
I'm fine. I recognize that voice. Yes. but tell everyone who you are.
I'm Franz Jones.
Yes. All right, sir.
I wanted to comment on a couple of things. In terms of non-traditional casting, as an actor, you well know, and we've talked about this amongst ourselves for a number of years. I personally believe in it. I've had to practice it in my own career because if I depended upon all black productions, I would probably never work. And that's frankly the truth. It's unfortunate, but that's what I've had to deal with. So I've always had to go out and find my work in other venues. But I was taught by my mother that you have to keep your mind open. And if you want to be an artist, that that kind of openness is going to allow you to be able to have a place for you, yourself, in the art. So that's what I wanted to say on that one. In terms of the LGBTQ community and what's going on in terms of the work there, I find it interesting because it is happening more and more, but it's happening only in certain ways with certain people. It is not as universal as your colleague said. It seems to be a lot of productions are done. There are a lot of gay people that also produce shows and direct shows, especially in the musical venues, and they tend to cast black people in a certain way. And they tend to want to leave us in that place. There's not as much variety as one might like to think. And again, it's unfortunate, but tends to be the truth. In terms of black theater, a lot of black plays are either, I remember one play from years ago, I'm trying to think of what's his name, George Wolfe's play, The Colored Museum, kind of made fun of some of the genres that black theater found themselves in, the Mother on the Couch play that burst into a musical at some point, but it always seemed to be that. There was either Mama on the Couch or some kind of musical review. A lot of stories aren't told. It only seems to be one thing or the other. And again, that's limiting. Lastly, I wanted to speak about the killings. It was interesting because I was struck last night when I found out that the young man that did this in Michigan was a black man. For years, whenever there's any kind of disturbance in the country, you always tend to look at television before you see the face of the person and go, oh, my God, I hope it's not a black person. Oh, my God, I hope it's not a black person. Because if it's a black person, it becomes more personal. We kind of feel it in a completely different way. But nowadays, it seems like it's everybody because it's not just black people. But here in Brooklyn, we had an Asian man that was running people down with a U-Haul truck.
Right.
You know, the pandemic did something to people. It's hard to kind of say exactly what it is, but I think people kind of lost their minds when they found out they couldn't be out in the street doing all the things they wanted to do, but then they went out in the street and did more. In my own neighborhood, we started to see people racing up and down the street, people having loud parties in their backyards, shootings, they have off-road vehicles in the city, which I'd never seen prior to the pandemic. Then all of a sudden, kids were riding off-road vehicles, taking over the streets. Now, there's a lot of lawlessness going on. It seems like we're going back to the Wild Wild West. You know, part of it might have been the person that was the leader of the country, because he represented a certain way of being that was not healthy for any of us. And then some of it might be because people are finding themselves in places that they find impossible to deal with. I don't know. But that's kind of where I am with it, and I wanted to just be able to say that.
Well, thank you so very much, Franz P. Jones.
Yes, you're more than welcome. Thank you.
I do think what this is about is trying to just get different outlooks on all of this, because we don't get a chance to sit around and talk about it. And quite frankly, we're not asked our opinion.
No.
We are told, we are told in a journalistic way what's going on, but sometimes those journalistic ways are commented upon. So we are victims mm-hmm. of someone else's interpretation of what has gone on.
Absolutely. Yeah, it's also, just very quickly, in terms of news is not what it used to be. When we were young, news was news. You literally watched it. They turned the camera on and showed you what was happening. Using an example, the civil rights movement of the 50s, 60s, into the 70s. They put on camera people being water hosed. They put on camera people being spat upon at the Five and Dimes lunch counters. They put the pictures of Emmett Till in magazines. So we saw it. Nowadays, news is rated like television shows. So they have to do things to try to get great ratings for their news shows. Fox needs to top ABC, who needs to top CBS. So it's not necessarily what's actually happening. But again, you're right. It's their take on it. So if so-and-so says it in a certain way, then more people are going to watch him, and that'll make his show more popular. It's not about the truth that we're seeing any longer. I don't think they can afford to actually show that truth, because if more people saw it, I think the world might be a lot more, might different than it is now.
Yeah, I think the arts has a way to go in order to achieve a more genuine interpretation of what is going on without being controlling of what particular information they decide to filter the information. And I don't really want filtered information. I remember being in Europe years ago and seeing the CNN in Europe and realizing I didn't hear anything like that when I was in the United States about all of this stuff that was going on. I was like,
right.
We just get a filtered version of what it is. And we in the arts, we need to work a little bit harder at really being, I think, more genuine to our constituency, to our demographic, when we write plays about different groups, to try not to please people as to, I'll put these characters in because then this theater will do it.
Right.
We have to try to find the brave producers who will do it no matter what, and whether they won't do a play in some theaters, won't do a play unless you have a character that is a part of a different race in it, and writers will push the limit and put a character in even though it's not important, so that their plays can be done. And I understand you don't write to be able to put your play up on the shelf. So what I'm saying is writers write what you want to write, and producers be strong enough and brave enough to please start producing those things, because I do believe it's been the last 7-8 years of my life, because I used to think, well, there's nobody writing this. I have now read so many wonderful plays that can't get past first base because they can't get green light.
Right. Absolutely.
So,
yes.
So thank you. You know, thank you.
You're more than welcome. You're more than welcome. It's nice to speak to you, ladies. Have a great conversation.
Thank you.
Bye now.
Thank you.
And this is quick because we're going to have to continue this on the webinar. But how do you feel about two things? There's two things I want to talk about. When there are tragedies in the European countries, and God knows I feel my heart goes out to them, there is a great deal of coverage. However, I know that there are countries with people of color who have so many tragedies and issues, and we don't hear about it. The imbalance there, how do we try to fix the imbalance? What do you think? And I'll say to you, am I out of my mind? Am I out of my mind? Makiva.
No, you're not out of your mind. There's definitely a lot of tragic. There's enough tragic in this world. It's unbelievable. But we only get, like you said, and like the gentleman said, we get a filtered version. You know, we're going to get what's going to bring the highest rating for that particular newscast, you know? And the only way the arts, I think, can get involved and make it better is just by that. Get involved and really speak on the truths that are happening, not only in you know, Europe, and even though it's very tragic, you know, but there are a lot of other things happening in Africa that we should be aware of, you know, and it's, I don't have the answer to that, but your perception is definitely right. We don't get to see the half of what's going on that our community would probably be more concerned with than what we see now.
And I don't want to give the impression that I'm not sympathetic to what's going on in Turkey and Syria. Of course I am, and the babies that are being pulled out, and I'm so glad that they're alive. But if their parents didn't, you know, live with the life that they have in front of them, all of that is tragic. But there are, you know, we need to cover a little bit. There's more happening too. You know, in that same vein, you show us that over and over and over again, but you never seem to show us anything else other than that. And that is what troubles me. You know, we see the Ukraine, we see, you know, Turkey and Syria, but we don't see a lot of the regions where people look a little differently and have it, you know, have it as difficult. And I don't know what we in the arts can do about that except for try to say that it is important. You know, everyone should say, not just people of color, everyone should say, because we people of color are being very empathetic and sympathetic to these countries. No one wants to see these people hurt. No one wants to experience a 7.5 earthquake, you know, absolutely not. But there are other tragedies that are happening that we would like to have paid attention to also. And I don't know if that's, you know, if there's an equal balance. What do you think, Fudgy?
Well, there definitely isn't an equal balance. I know that from just being in an organization, an educational organization for women, and we are constantly at the UN talking about what's happening in South Sudan, talking about what's happening in parts of Asia that we don't get the news about. And again, of course, we're all sympathetic to the earthquake that just happened in Syria and Turkey, and of course, what's going on in the Ukraine. But you have to sometimes go to other sources just to know what's happening around the world. You have to go to other networks just to find out what's happening globally in other parts of the world. And then we still have things that are happening, you know, right here in our country. It's Flint, Michigan, out of the doghouse with their water problem. There's still some areas in the Delta where children aren't getting the right kinds of educational supplies that they should get in their schools. So there are still problems going on in the world and in the United States that we don't hear about in a global way like we should. So we have to go to alternative sources. I'm constantly looking and seeing what the UN is talking about, and I'm constantly looking at world news on other networks just to find out what else is going on in the world.
We're down to like the last minute, but one of the things that I want to continue our conversation is when we pick it up in the webinar is recently, you know, I don't want to sound like it's okay for somebody else to abuse anyone who is being apprehended and has shown some resistance, because we should be in a law-abiding society. But recently I was disturbed to find we always thought that abuse was based on a color, that people didn't understand how people of color, what we were going through and how we resisted. But recently there was an attack by people of color on a man of color. And I'm not understanding, and this is a concern. I'm just not understanding. Is it a uniform way that these people that the officers are trained? Is there, you know, I'm not getting to try to understand what it is, because I have a great respect for the law and order in our country, but I'm not understanding. It's hard for me to articulate. What's going on now? Is it universally that when one is apprehended, that one must really fear for their lives? And it is something that evokes in my family. I am married to a Black American man who is very, very cautious outside of our community. People know who we are in our community, but outside of our community, you are just another person of color. Do you have that kind of fear, and do you have it from everyone? So that's a question that I'm going to, you all think about it. And as I, in this program, because we're down to the last couple of minutes, we'll go to the webinar and think and say, okay, lady, okay?
Yes.
Okay, you too.
Okay. That sounds wonderful.
Okay. All right. I want to thank the audience for joining in on this. I like doing these. I mean, of course, I always like discovering people and how they fit into the arts, but I also think that to change the arts, we really must talk to people who are supportive of the arts and have a voice in it. And maybe the people who make those deciding the events will listen, will hear something, and it'll click. But let me just say, next week I have a wonderful guest, Carmen A. Mathis, who has her own show, the Carmen Mathis Show, long before I've had mine. And I can't wait to talk to Carmen and see what I can learn from her next week. It'll be about the arts. And then I want to do some more of these talks again all the way through the end of the season. So you may hear these voices again, everyone. But thank you so very much for tuning in. And tune in next Wednesday to Lenny Got Straight No Chaser. And listen to Carmen and I talk about the arts. And hopefully join us at the webinar. I'll see you on the radio. Thank you. Bye-bye now. Lenny Gottfried, Straight No Chaser.
This is something we all know. Fever isn't such a new thing. Fever started long ago. Never know how much I love you. You never know how much I care. When you put your arms around me, I get a feeling that's too hard to bear. You give me fever. When you kiss me, fever. When you hold me tight, fever. In the morning, fever all through the night.